The Pentagon ponders closing foreign bases. The engine quit over the middle of Lake Michigan. And old 927 fills in for Fifi. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, August 18th, 2010. Congress and the Pentagon are reportedly considering the number of U.S. Air Force bases in Europe and Asia in preparation for closing as many as a third of them. The Air Force Times reports the study follows an order from Defense Secretary Robert Gates to find $102 billion in savings over the next 5 years. Defense News reports the U.S. could save as much as $80 billion of that by cutting military presence in Asia and Europe by about 33%. A congressional task force recommended the Air Force cut a fighter wing and about 10,000 airmen. Overall, as many as 50,000 service personnel would be cut if the plan went forward. Task Force member Benjamin Friedman told Defense News, quote, "Our allies can afford to defend themselves. The Cold War is over," unquote. The NTSB has released a preliminary factual report in the ditching of a Cessna 206 in Lake Michigan July 23rd. The pilot, the only survivor, told investigators that he and his pilot-rated right seat passenger were taking a patient from Alma, Michigan to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, accompanied by the patient's wife and a doctor. The plane had been filled with fuel the night before the flight, and all went normally until they were over the middle of Lake Michigan at 10,000 feet. The pilot says the engine started running rough and fuel flow dropped. Application of the boost pump restored power for 30 to 45 seconds, but then the engine quit completely. So he left two doors ajar and had passengers don life vests. Upon ditching, the plane flipped on its back and quickly filled with water. The pilot says he briefly saw the doctor and his right seat passenger in the water, but was hit by a wave, and when he resurfaced, quote, "everything was gone," unquote. The pilot was eventually rescued by the crew of a passing boat. The remaining bodies in the wreckage were found under about 170 feet of water. The engine was separated by the impact, but has been sent to the manufacturer for inspection. Get more details on this chilling story in the text version dated August 17th at aero-news.net. A .45-caliber semi-automatic pistol checked on a Continental flight from Denver to Houston July 26th was missing when its owner arrived at his destination, and the gun hasn't been seen since. Danny Gravois told KMGH-TV in Denver he placed the firearm in a case and checked it properly, but when he arrived in Houston, the case did not come up at baggage claim. He's filed a complaint with the airline, as well as a report with the Houston police. Continental will say only that it has launched an internal investigation. The Commemorative Air Force's consolidated B-24A Liberator, old 927, will be filling in for the B-29 Fifi for the first stop of the CAF's Red, White, and Loud Tour at the Colorado Sport International Air Show and Rocky Mountain Fly-In August 28th and 29th. Fifi was expected to join country music star, pilot, and CAF spokesman Aaron Tippin at the event, but during flight testing in Texas, a distributor malfunction caused detonation, which damaged some cylinders in one engine. The CAF expects the engine to be repaired and the B-29 to return to flight in time for the 2010 CAF Air Show, October 9th and 10th at Midland International Airport between Midland and Odessa, Texas. Get details on the Rocky Mountain fly-in at cosportaviation.org. But warning, turn your speakers down first. Up next on ANN, the NTSB holds a symposium on code sharing. A new museum opens on Florida's Space Coast. And RC faces a scale model of a real airport problem. You're listening to Aero News.
Freedom through control. Cirrus has completely reinvented the personal aircraft and the entire experience of owning a personal aircraft. It's a bold new take on private aviation that we call Cirrus Flying 2.0. You set the schedule. You chart the course. You're in control.
Leading the way to a new generation of aircraft, Eclipse Aerospace introduces the Total Eclipse Twin Engine Jet. The Total Eclipse is a sophisticated, high-performance aircraft with low operating costs, low environmental impact, and uncompromised safety. Every Total Eclipse jet comes with flights to 41,000 feet, max cruise speeds of 370 knots, an onboard color radar with electronic moving maps and e-charts. And of course, every total eclipse comes complete with a factory warranty. Log on to eclipseaerospace.net for more information.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for August 18th. I'm Paul Plack. NTSB will hold a two-day symposium on the role that airline code-sharing arrangements play in aviation safety. The event will be chaired by NTSB Chairman Deborah Herzman, October 26th and 27th in Washington, D.C. Recent NTSB investigations of accident flights operated under code-sharing arrangements include the February 2009 Colgan Air accident at Buffalo, which was operated as a Continental Connection flight, a 2007 Pinnacle Airlines accident in Traverse City, Michigan, operated as Northwest Airlink, and the infamous 2006 Wrong Runway accident at Lexington, Kentucky, in which a Comair flight was operated as Delta Connection. Herzman commented, quote, "We have investigated many accidents in which passengers bought tickets on a major carrier and flew all or part of their trip on a different carrier, one that may have been operating to different safety standards than the carrier that issued the ticket. While all carriers are required to meet minimum standards, a clearer picture and deeper understanding of the best safety practices for code-sharing arrangements are the goals of this symposium," unquote. Get more details under News and Events at www.ntsb.gov. The U.S. Air Force Space and Missile History Center is now open to the public, just outside the south gate of Cape Canaveral Air Force Station in Florida. The facility is located in what was the auditorium of the former Space Florida building. The museum's just-launched website says it's dedicated to assisting the Air Force's 45th Space Wing in preserving the history and telling the story of launch operations from Cape Canaveral. The new museum is open to the public with no admission charge Tuesday through Sunday. The main exhibit takes visitors through the history of each launch pad at Cape Canaveral, which was originally the nation's joint long-range proving ground when it opened in 1949. It's not just full-sized airports that are disappearing from the American countryside. Radio-controlled model aircraft clubs are unfortunately experiencing a scale model of the problem faced by general aviation. The 36-member Eastern Idaho Aero Modelers, who have been leasing a patch of ground at Pocatello Regional Airport for $261 a year, has been informed by the airport manager that a manufacturer is eyeing the site and that it may have to move. The rent is not the big deal. The club has invested $30,000 in irrigation and a 450-by-40-foot runway and says it would take 10 to 15 years to raise the money to replicate the setup if another site could be found. Both sides are approaching the issue like rational adults. Airport manager David Allen says it's about appropriate uses of airport property and promises the club won't be evicted prematurely. Either side can terminate the lease with 90 days' notice, and that hasn't officially happened yet. Allen says he gave the club an early heads-up at its last meeting to allow extra time to search for a new home. The club has approached county commissioners about finding a new site and has reportedly talked with officials at the Bannock County Fairgrounds and some gravel pit owners. Still ahead, NASA remembers the contributions of John New. Oklahoma celebrates Will Rogers and Wiley Post. And Southwest Airlines considers upsizing. You're listening to Aero News.
Piperjet.
Hypersport.
Pipermatch.
Global Expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/piperaircraft.
This AeroCast segment is sponsored by 4Flight, makers of 4Flight Mobile HD, the elegantly designed iPad and iPhone app for pilots. Learn more about 4Flight's new touch-based flight planning capability. Build complex flight plans and bend routes around weather in just seconds using only your fingers. With HD NexRad, VFR and IFR charts, terminal procedures, a comprehensive AFD, and now touch planning. Visit us online at www.4flight.com. 4Flight. Intelligent apps for pilots.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, August 18th. I'm Paul Platt. NASA and the aerospace community are remembering the life and career of John New, an engineer at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center during the early days of satellite development. He died July 28th at the age of 89. New was credited with developing many of the facilities and operations used to test satellites in the early 60s. He joined NASA in 1959 at the Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, which had just been commissioned, as the founding director of what was eventually called the Test and Evaluation Division at the center. The time was shortly after Sputnik rocked the world, and the Washington Post reports that New's lab in a converted warehouse was soon expanded to include dozens of buildings. New and his engineers borrowed much of their early satellite test equipment, and what they couldn't borrow, they built from scratch. Within 2 years of the establishment of the facility, the agency had launched 3 satellites, all tested by New and his staff. Among the facilities they built were a launch simulator, vacuum chamber, and devices to test environmental conditions like vibration, heat, and electromagnetism. New worked at Goddard for over 15 years, retiring in 1976. So next time you watch a distant baseball game via satellite, pause and remember John New during the 7th inning stretch. 3 states held a commemorative moment marking the 75th anniversary of the crash that took the lives of Will Rogers and Wiley Post on August 15, 1935. In Oklahoma, the event took place at the Will Rogers Birthplace Ranch near Claremore and was marked with a flyover. The crash that killed Rogers and Post happened in Alaska. The day not only honors these 2 aviation legends, but the love of flying. Steve Gregert, director of the Will Rogers Museum in Claremore, observed, quote, "To celebrate again their achievements in aviation, their accomplishments in forwarding commercial and military aviation, and their love for aviation, that's why these pilots are here to celebrate," unquote. Other tributes marking the anniversary were held in Alaska and California. And finally, Southwest Airlines is the world's largest operator of Boeing 737s. So it was big news when rumor had it the airline was looking at bigger planes. But the change wouldn't be that revolutionary. The bigger planes in question would be the 737-800, which offers more seats than the 700 model, which is the current workhorse of the Southwest fleet. The Dallas Morning News reports Southwest flight attendant and transport workers union unit head Tom McDaniel released a statement Friday which said in part, quote, "The members of the flight attendants union are excited about the possibilities that the addition of new, larger, longer-range aircraft could mean for both our company and the customers we serve," unquote. He says integrating the larger planes would require reopening contract talks and that the long lead time required by Boeing would require those talks be wrapped up by this December 1st. The airline also released a statement Friday saying the decision to convert some of its orders to the 800 is not final yet, but that the larger planes could improve unit costs and provide options in high-demand, slot-controlled, or gate-restricted markets. Swell. Just swell. Now, if I forget to log in 24 hours out, I'll wind up boarding in the D line. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, Sonex Aircraft CEO Jeremy Monette talks about a number of new projects underway in the Sonex Hornet's Nest. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iTunes, Odeo, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.